97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. You're listening to the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
Well, the good news is it's not raining again. It's beautiful in St. Louis. It's a gorgeous day. It's 81 degrees. The dew point's in the 40s right now. Gorgeous weather with a warm weekend in store for our area. So yesterday, Sue, I mentioned this. I'm on the air. I get a text message from my friend John Ziegler in L.A., and he sends a link to an article from the Missouri Independent. The headline is Credibility of State's Expert Witnesses Questioned in Missouri Transgender Healthcare Trial. And he says this. He says, let me know when you want me to discuss this. Read the article. Notice he didn't say, let me know if you want to discuss
right.
it. He just makes the assumption that I'm going to want to talk about it, Zig. That's how this is, right?
Well, I'm on, aren't I?
Of course you are. And I had no idea what it was. And I'm on the air. And then I read down. And sure enough, your name is mentioned in this. It's a case that the ACLU is bringing against our attorney general that has to do with transgender care. And maybe I should just kind of let you take it from here. First of all, how did you know that you were mentioned in this? Do you have some alerts that tell you, or did someone point you in this direction?
No, I was sent this by dozens of people because this is a really bizarre situation. I mean, there's several layers to this story. The first part is how strange it is, and you yeah. and I later texted, you think you might be the genesis of this whole thing, because the expert witness is a guy by the name of Michael Bailey, who you know, and there seems to be a logical progression that's how Michael Bailey and I became connected, because he listened to my podcast about the Penn State Joe Paterno Jerry Sandusky scandal, and that somehow came up with the judge questioning him and his belief in my podcast being correct and accurate, and then this Missouri Independent publication using that to attack his credibility and calling me a conspiracy theorist.
Right.
And the judge, you know, basically acting like this is a nutty theory. Who the hell's this John Ziegler guy? And I'm like, oh my gosh. First of all, I felt badly for Michael. But there's so many different elements of how insane this is. I mean,
yeah. Let me back up just a little bit, because one thing I didn't understand at first, because there's a couple of Baileys here. So I know our Attorney General Andrew Bailey very well, and that's, you know, he's involved in this case because they sued Missouri. I don't know John Michael Bailey, but let's kind of set it up from there, because what happens is Andrew Bailey's office calls John Michael Bailey. He's a psychology professor at Northwestern, and they kind of flag him on a social media post about, and this is how the story reads, about the accusers of Jerry Sandusky that appeared to concern Carter. Carter's the judge. And they describe who Sandusky was, and they say Bailey, this is the witness, repeatedly posted on social media that he believes Sandusky is innocent. You believe the people testifying against Jerry Sandusky are lying, the judge asks. I can see that if you're not familiar with the evidence that I am familiar with, you would be shocked. And the judge, I mean, this is just a newspaper quote, John, but he goes, you can tell that the tone is bleeding through where he does not believe this. And Carter even says, look, have you talked to anyone that was an eyewitness? And Bailey says, I've read the testimony, but I've not talked to anyone. So that's when you kind of get accused of being the conspiracy theorist. And I've told the audience here the last 24 hours, because I've listened to your podcast, I was skeptical on the Sandusky stuff, John. I really was. You know that. But you turned me around relatively quickly with the podcast.
Well, everybody that's listened to our podcast, which is called With the Benefit of Hindsight, and has given it any sort of an effort with an open mind, has had the exact same experience that you have. They've been converted from thinking this is crazy
yeah.
to thinking it's incredibly obvious that I'm right. And there's several layers to this, but if we're going to talk about whether I'm right or not, ironically, Mark, I think this whole crazy episode with this judge invoking me in our podcast to try to discredit this witness on this issue that's completely unrelated to the Sandusky case is the perfect proof that the circumstances needed for me to be right are there in spades, because the level of absurdity and injustice that I believe happened, I know happened, I believe I've proven happened, can only occur when a story is so toxic that even a judge who knows nothing about the case is so inherently absolutely dead set against a contrarian point of view that they inherently think that it's destroying the credibility of a witness who has an opinion on it that doesn't fit with the conventional wisdom, when the witness knows a hell of a lot more about the case clearly than the judge does, or the general public does, or the media does. And that's really the essence of what happened in that whole situation. The media, stop me if you've heard this before, Mark, bought into a completely absurd and false narrative. They ran with it, and then there was a domino effect of insanity and injustice that's still going on to this day, as we saw in this episode in Missouri.
You highlight things in your podcast, the death of media, the death of journalism all the time. You've done this for a long time, John. That's how we met. You did the documentary on Sarah Palin and the media malfeasance back then. So we talk about these things all the time, but there is no better example, and it's hard to explain to people, and you do it in several episodes, a lot of episodes in this podcast. In my mind, there is no greater example of media malfeasance than the Jerry Sandusky case. It is stunning, the details that you expose in this documentary.
Well, the podcast is about 60 to 80 hours long, depending on how you define it and whether or not you go into all the raw interviews that we have. I mean, we have proven a negative in this podcast. We've proven it. I mean, it's almost impossible to do. And against, what the world thinks is a absolutely rock-solid case against Penn State, against Joe Paterno, Jerry Sandusky, we're not talking about reasonable doubt. We prove innocence. And it's not even close. And, you say this is the worst case you've seen, and I agree. I've lived it for over a decade. But the best example or comparison I can use to this case is a lot of what happened in the COVID panic. To me, they're very similar. In fact, I think I was well prepared for the COVID panic and way ahead of the curve in fighting back against it, because I had experienced what happened with Penn State, Joe Paterno, and Jerry Sandusky. It was exactly the same type of story. There's an initial panic. There's media malpractice. There are people becoming invested in the fairy tale. There's people who are invested in things that seem to be against their own self-interest, but are, in fact, are not, when you understand the full scope of the story. The only difference is COVID was real. The sex abuse in the Penn State case was not. And it's not close, and it's infuriating to me that a good man like Michael Bailey is having his reputation tarnished in court by a judge in Missouri who doesn't have a damn idea what the hell he's talking about.
Well, and so this is a tough situation to explain. Like, if I talk about this with friends or even here on my show, it's very difficult to communicate because this is so intricate and the podcast is so detailed. And you know this, John. I think, you can kind of cull it down to what that judge said. Okay, yeah, you're going to defend some dude that was diddling boys in the shower, right? Because that's the perception of the case.
Right. And that's why our first episode is called The Date. Because I was very strong in the belief that we can't go into this saying that these accusers that had halos put over their heads by the news media and by the state of Pennsylvania are all a bunch of money-grubbing liars, even though they all got paid millions and millions of dollars for stories that had no proof, that were not consistent, that had all sorts of problems. But that's not even where we start. We start with the simple date of the episode that everyone thinks they know, which is the whole Mike McQueary, Jerry Sandusky in a shower episode. And when you go through the very simple timeline of what I think actually, in fact, I believe I've proven what actually happened, the dates are completely wrong. And by the way, the prosecution was forced to admit in court that they got the original date and the month and the year of this thing completely wrong. And when you understand just the basic timeline, that episode, which for 99% of the public is all they know of the story, is a fairy tale. It did not happen. It's clear
it's
that
shocking.
It did not happen.
Yeah, it is clear that it didn't happen. And by the way, for people, one of the things I guess Mr. Bailey could have said to that judge is, not that there's nothing about checking out your credibility, but obviously, and you can explain this further, John, Graham Spanier, who was the president of Penn State, wrote a book called In the Lion's Den, The Penn State Scandal and the Rush to Judgment, right?
Right. The Graham Spanier story, there's so many elements of this thing that drive me insane. But, Graham Spanier, it was an esteemed member of the liberal academic elite before this situation occurred. He never even had a conversation with Jerry Sandusky or Mike McQueary, the only witness in the case. He went to prison because of Josh Shapiro, the governor of Pennsylvania, having nothing but a vindictive desire for political purposes.
Was he AG at the time? Is that what it was?
Oh, it was. This Graham Spanier story alone would be a massive injustice.
Yeah.
In a rational media world, and I've gotten to know Graham exceedingly well. We agree on nothing. I mean, he's super liberal, and obviously I'm super conservative. You know, we've had it out. I've screamed and yelled at him, which I'm probably the only person in the world that's ever done that to him as an adult. I mean, but
wait, you screamed and yelled at someone? I don't think that would
this guy could not be more innocent. And, you know, a guy who was a breath away from being the vice presidential nominee for nothing but selfish political reasons. By the way, he has cancer, very serious cancer. Put him in jail for several months because of all the toxicity of this case. That is the atmosphere. That's the only way an injustice of this level could occur, when the atmosphere is that toxic, where anyone who comes even close to it, even someone with the reputation of a Graham Spanier, ends up being forced to go to prison for something that they had nothing to do with.
It's stunning. It really is stunning. The other thing that I remember, you and I talked about this, and he passed away a couple years ago, but you became very close with Franco Harris, who played, of course, for the Steelers Hall of Famer, but he went to Penn State, and he was on your side on all this, wasn't he?
Franco was one of my favorite people. If you search it, you can find a podcast that Franco was working on when he suddenly passed away just before the 50th anniversary of the Immaculate Reception. And Franco, in my opinion, Mark, is a key witness in the case. I'll give you 20 seconds of this. So he's at Joe Paterno's funeral, okay? He decides, because he's smelling a rat, to go confront Mike McQueary in the middle of there's still the media firestorm. No one has found out what the hell's really going on here. So Franco Harris, a legend, goes up to Mike McQueary and says, "Mike, what the hell did you see in the shower?" Mike McQueary makes it clear to Franco Harris he saw nothing. Absolutely nothing. Franco was like, "What is going on here?" And so at that moment, Franco dedicated much of what was left of his life to vindicating Joe Paterno, his coach, and he let me do the Jerry Sandusky stuff. So yeah. We were a team that way. He was the Paterno defender, and I had an enviable position of defending Jerry Sandusky on the Today Show and on CNN and with Matt Lauer and all sorts of other crazy things that happened in this case. But I miss Franco very, very much. Franco knew what really happened.
Yeah. Yeah, well, look, I would highly recommend it. It's called With the Benefit of Hindsight. It is very detailed. I can't lie, John, I didn't listen to all of it, but I listened to several episodes,
right.
And you absolutely had me convinced, and it's fascinating and it's scary when you think about it. Now, I don't know if you approach things differently, because I certainly try to, but let's use the Eric Adams case as an example, and it looks pretty bad for Eric Adams, but you have to wonder about the truth in all these cases, considering how they take on a life of their own.
Well, that's a great point, and frankly, there's been so much of my life that's been disrupted by the whole Jerry Sandusky part of it, but one of them is that now it's very difficult to me to accept any story as true on its face. But what I really hate, and this is kind of related to what happened in this court case why we're talking, is that we now live in a world, Mark, where almost every notorious person who's guilty gets an opportunity for people to claim they're innocent. I mean, Scott Peterson, O.J. Simpson, the Menendez brothers. I mean, people are clearly guilty as hell. And it drives me crazy, because those people are all guilty, and they get a conspiracy theory, sometimes taken seriously by a Netflix or whatever. And you know, poor Jerry Sandusky was presumed guilty from the moment one, never even got a first bite of the apple of telling his side of the story. He's still alive. He's going to die in prison. All sorts of people were damaged because of this. And yes, I am now more skeptical of every story, but I'm not a that was the part of this story in the Missouri Independent
that set
drove
you
me
off,
crazy.
Right. No, I know.
I'm the anti-conspiracy person, not a conspiracy person.
You know,
I hate conspiracies.
That is a great point, John, about how all these other people who are guilty are held up as heroes. And I would point to Making a Murderer, which is the Netflix series that went into this case that was from Wisconsin. And I lived there, Stephen Avery, and I know a lot about that case. There could not be someone who's more guilty than Stephen Avery. But you have half the country who watched that damn documentary thinking that he's innocent.
And it drives me crazy, not just from an injustice standpoint, but because of I believe they're inherently... The first reaction people have when they hear about my version of this story is they think it's another BS edition
of
you know, Making the Murder, or, you know, OJ is innocent, or, you know, something crazy like that. And it just drives me crazy because it's exactly the opposite.
I know that. And that's why I want to get you on to talk about it, even though you kind of ordered me to have you on. But let me get you 2 minutes here before I let you go. State of the race. I had my friend John Lamping on, who's a former state senator. John is awesome. We go to a lot of concerts together. He's a good friend. But he's very optimistic at this point on the results of this election. I just had Selena Zito on. She felt like talking to real people, working class people in Pennsylvania, that Pennsylvania might be trending in a good direction for Trump. J.D. Vance did a great job the other night, John. We were communicating a little bit during the debate. So thoughts 5 weeks out from Election Day?
Well, I mean, I think that if the election were today, Harris would barely win because I think she wins Pennsylvania. I can see Trump winning North Carolina. I think he wins Georgia. I think he wins Arizona. But I don't see him winning Michigan. I don't see him winning Wisconsin. So that leaves he must win Pennsylvania, which is my old home state. I have to say that I think that Harris is the favorite in Pennsylvania, mainly because the place where I grew up, the suburbs of Philadelphia, the suburban moms there do not like Donald Trump, and the abortion issue has pushed them, in my opinion, too much in Harris's direction. And so that has always been the key voting demo in Pennsylvania. Now, look, there's still this strike situation on the East Coast could change some things. Who knows? I don't know how that would, you know, where the blame would go on that. But gun to my head, I think Harris wins an incredibly close election, with obviously Pennsylvania being the key to that. If she loses Pennsylvania, then she, in all likelihood, loses the election. But I'm really concerned, Mark, that we are looking down the barrel of a situation that is going to be way worse than 2020, way worse than 2000. We could have an incredibly close election with five states counting votes for days or weeks, with obviously a combustible circumstance with Trump being one of the candidates and the legacy of 2020. So
yeah,
I am
not a good
very
feeling.
Concerned
no,
about the post-election environment.
I would share those concerns. Zig, great to have you on. Check out With the Benefit of Hindsight. I think you will be dazzled by that. You were less crabby today than the last time. I like that as well. So have a good weekend.
Well, thanks, Mark. Take care.
See ya. Well, we are almost to Friday, ladies and gentlemen. That means the Reardon Roundtable at 3 o'clock tomorrow. Jane will be here, State Rep Steve Butts, former State Rep Gene Evans, who's involved in a lot of education issues now in Missouri, will be here. She's a veteran of the panel. We'll have Paul Hall in entertainment, Mr. Cusimano, with a bit of a preview of the Tigers. We'll talk some baseball also, but I really want to talk baseball with Bernie Miklas. He's going to join us tomorrow night. He's doing a regular gig on Camo X, coming back to radio. So Camo X is a sister station, of course, of 97.1 FM Talk, and we invited Bernie. I've known Bernie for a while. He's a big Springsteen guy like I am, although he's seen three times as many shows as I have. I will say this, and Bernie, he's not the same as our politics, 97.1 FM Talk listeners, but that's okay. But he has followed and unfollowed me more times than anyone else on Twitter back in the day. I don't think he does that anymore, but he would just kind of back off on the politics sometimes. But we can agree on a lot of things, and we'll do that tomorrow night. We'll also have in the 5 o'clock hour tomorrow, Rick Wakeman, who is from the legendary rock band Yes. Rick is coming to play a show at the Sheldon on October 20th, and I'm looking forward to that, looking forward to the chat. I spoke with him a couple of weeks ago, and he's excited about coming to St. Louis. So this happened, of course, at the debate. The second question, the most important question, was climate change. It wasn't the actual disaster itself and the people who are dying and in need, but it's climate change, Nora O'Donnell.
Scientists say climate change makes these hurricanes larger, stronger, and more deadly because of the historic rainfall. Senator Vance, according to CBS News polling, 7 in 10 Americans and more than 60% of Republicans under the age of 45 favor the U.S. taking steps to try and reduce climate change. Senator, what responsibility would the Trump administration have to try and reduce the impact of climate change?
Beth Brellia is with me this afternoon. She is the elections correspondent for The Federalist and wrote a piece on this very topic. Beth, how are you this afternoon? Welcome to 97.1 FM Talk.
Hey, my pleasure to be here. Very well, thank you.
I've been talking about this all week just because, look, here was my suggestion. No one's going to listen to me, but I really thought J.D. Vance should have come out on Monday and said we're postponing this debate because people in North Carolina and elsewhere really desperately need help and, you know, just headed that way. Now, and I wasn't just hoping you would have done that for virtue signaling. I would have hoped that it would have been the right thing to do. But, of course, they go right to climate change, don't they, on Tuesday night.
Oh, my goodness, yes. And I really think the left is just using this tragedy to send an unspoken message to people. They're politicizing it by saying, if you don't want to suffer like these hurricane victims are suffering, you better vote for someone who is really into climate change. And I think Vance made such a great point. Well, if you really want to address climate change, then I don't know if you can hear my air quotes.
yeah, I could. I could hear them. Yes.
You know, then we should be doing business differently, because really what this administration is doing is throwing tons of money at pet projects that certainly have friends and donors behind them, solar and wind. But you know what? Solar and wind is not doing the lion's share of the recovery for those folks affected by the hurricane. You know, people are saying it's the gas-powered car, it's the gas-powered chainsaw. Have you ever used an electric chainsaw?
No, but honestly, I have not, but I do. I have one in my garage right now because my wife's aunt lent it to us. So I've not dared to use it yet, but I am familiar, actually.
Okay, you're one of those guys that doesn't give the tools back.
No,
huh? Okay.
No, yeah, that's partially true, too. It's also I'm a guy that doesn't have his own tools because I have no skills. So there it is.
Yeah. Well, now, a couple of days hence, right, we see in the news our taxpayer-funded PBS has a story out, Hurricane Helene's reach shows why no place is immune from the impacts of climate change. It means that this could happen to you, voter. Associated Press, Hurricane Helene brings climate change to the forefront of the campaign. And NBC, Salon, and there's all these stories. If you look around, they're easy to find that are saying they're tying climate change. We thought that this area was safe, but everybody can be hurt by climate change. But man, just a couple degrees different would not make any difference. It's hurricane season, right?
Look, you know, there was so much, and I'm so glad you're a guest today because I have not had time to get into this climate change topic in detail. One of the things, Beth, that I found interesting the other night was when Tim Walz was talking about climate change, he was actually saying some of the right things because he was talking about adapting, adaptation. I'm a lukewarmer, so I think, yeah, the climate's changed. I don't know how much we're causing it. What I do know, though, and even the climate alarmists would, you know, admit this, is that no matter what we will do or what we're suggesting that we do, it ain't going to make a bit of difference. Now, if you want to make everyone live in a 10-by-10 box and, you know, ration electricity and all that, well, maybe that would happen if you can do it around the planet, but we would have very little impact on any kind of changes, so you damn well better look forward and think about adaptation, which ironically, he's talked about the other night, Tim Walz.
Yeah, well, I mean, it makes a lot of sense. I think everybody can agree we should be good to our environment. We live in it, you know, so we should care about what happens to our environment. But throwing a bunch of money, if you look at the Inflation Reduction Act, which is really the repackaged Green New Deal, they're throwing a lot of money at things. And, you know, I don't remember when they were dumping money at people who would carbon credits, right? Like, I have a big field and I'm never going to develop it. And another bunch of people have they're dirtying the environment. But if they purchase carbon credits from the people at the big field, the people at the big field get money, and the people who are making a mess of the environment keep doing the same thing, and somehow we've made it better. Nothing has changed except money has moved hands. So, You know, these are the kinds of schemes that are doing nothing for our environment. So J.D. Vance was saying, maybe let's not do business with China where they're still developing new coal plants. They're not buying into the cleaning the environment. So other countries need to do that. We're a clean country. Instead of shipping all of our goods in from other nations, which takes an awful lot of energy, why don't we make more stuff here? Because we are better at handling the environment than the countries we're getting our goods from. These are things that will help heal the planet and be meaningful. I thought I made a good point.
Absolutely. You know, the other thing, and now this is a little tougher to talk about because Helene was so devastating, and you got to wait till see what the final numbers are, but maybe you've noticed this as well. If you go back to May and certainly the beginning of June or maybe the end of June, all kinds of forecasts about the most active hurricane season in the Atlantic ever. This was going to be really, really bad with the most cyclones ever. Well, as of 3 weeks ago, it was the least ever. It wasn't that they were off by a little. Now, obviously, this was a Category 4. It's a pretty serious storm. You're going to have hurricanes. But in the end, I don't know where the numbers will end. My point is that they can't even predict this right. They want to make it seem like we're causing all this devastation because of climate change. I always point to, there was a piece in the New York Times, Beth, about, I went back and checked this recently. I think it was in 2014, actually. A guy from U.S. Berkeley, Radical Berkeley, mm-hmm. but he was a guy who did believe in man-made climate change, but he wrote a piece called "The Truth About Tornadoes," and there needs to be more of this because you had, and this happened after Katrina. Oh, it's going to be more devastating hurricanes. All these predictions and tornadoes are going to be more impactful, deadlier, and he had to admit, no, that's not really the case. In fact, if you look back in history, it's probably less deadly, but we got more. It's just like wildfires, Beth. You got more people living in places that we didn't used to have. Same thing with hurricanes, if we're being honest. So they affect more people because of the population growth. They never want to talk about urban heat islands, which that's a real thing. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much that plays into the equation, but it is real. So this is very complicated. It's nuanced. But this notion that it's all set in stone and settled science, that this is changing and we can do something about it, is just a joke.
Well, they're tying it to politics, clearly for political purposes. But I believe that we need to spend our money on less sexy but super important things. Like, I don't know if you're aware, but all across the country, anybody who's been a local reporter can tell you, water treatment facilities and all the pipes that are under our ground, so many of them are just antiquated and they're cracked and broken and leaking. Now imagine you've got an overwhelmed water treatment facility and you get a bunch of rain that comes in. Now the ground is bursting open with water that's leaking outside of these pipes that are in the ground all over town, all over the countryside, and that weakens the land. Now you add hurricane level water. Well, it's no match, right? I mean, it's just
absolutely
a weaken. So that really unhelpful. Same thing with bridges that are, not every bridge I know we've had over the last maybe decade or so a lot of attention put on bridges, but there's still so many weakened bridges. You stand under a bridge and see how it's crumbling, and then imagine torrents of water coming down. It's not going to be able to withstand something like that. So we need to handle our infrastructure, make sure that it's solid and it can handle these kinds of 200-year events.
I couldn't agree more. I could not agree more. And, you mentioned in your piece the power grid. I mean, and this is what we do in this country. Let's face it. We wait until it gets really, really bad and it's a devastating situation before we act. And a lot of that is because of lack of leadership, I would say. I mean, I'm talking right now from a city that has $250,000 in a bank account from a settlement where we sued the NFL because we used to have a football team here, the Rams, and they moved back to L.A. And then we got about the same amount, if not more, in feds from ARPA, and they're just sitting on it here. We got a 911 system that doesn't work. To your point, there's lots of pipes and issues with infrastructure, but they want to, Beth, I'm not going to make this up. You know what they're talking about here in the city of St. Louis? There was a city panel this week. Reparations. That's how we're going to spend that money. Reparations.
That's not helpful.
No.
People just want the basics. I'll tell you what, the people over in Tennessee that still are trapped in their towns and will be for the foreseeable future, they simply want water. and shelter and where their food, where their gas is going to come from. We want the government really only has to do the basics. That's why it exists. It doesn't exist to make things fair and nice or socially orchestrate the world. We just want the basics. And government has totally lost sight of that. They want to control the world. It's a waste of money.
It is a waste of money. And then I'm going to close on this along those lines, because, and I thought this was something that was made up, but if you look on the FEMA website at their priorities, they have a list of priorities. You know what the second thing on the list is? The first is disaster response and recovery. The second is equity. In fact, I think they changed that around, because I got a screenshot from this week where equity was at the top of that page. And that's what they're doing. That's what we're dealing with the federal government. That's awesome, right?
I don't know if you're aware, but within about the last 4 hours or so, I saw that the federal government, the Transportation Administration, has said they're banning private drones over the disaster area. And I think, you know, those drones can help with search and rescue, but they only want government drones going over.
That's outrageous.
I think that they want fewer pictures of the devastation, you know? I think they don't want people to see what's really going on there. And what's really going on there will break your heart.
I know. And I've been warning my audience about this all week, because I think it's a lot worse than we've even been, you know, led to believe at this point. So, Beth, thanks so much for writing about this and jumping on with me here this afternoon in St. Louis. Really appreciate it.
Thanks.
That's Beth Yellia. I did go back to the FEMA website, and maybe I saw it wrong, but it's still number one. If you go to this is unreal. That if you go to the FEMA website, FEMA.gov, I thought this was made up when somebody pointed this out the other day. You just page down a little bit, and it says three bold ambitious goals. This is the Federal Emergency Management Association, right? The goals and objectives laid out in the plan will help ensure success for our agency, emergency management community, and those we serve. Goal number one, instill equity as the foundation of emergency management. That is the top thing on the website right now for FEMA. I mean, are you kidding me? And then lead whole of community in climate resilience. That's number two.
Great.
Number three is promote and sustain a ready FEMA and prepared nation. Well, I'll tell you where you're falling flat, and that's goal number three, because you aren't doing your damn job. That is stunning. You want another reason why you got to... You know, and I'm doing it too, ladies and gentlemen. Hold your tongue and hold your breath, or whatever you hold when you don't like someone. Hold your nose, I guess it is, with Donald Trump. If you don't like him, who cares? The whole damn country's on the line right now. October 3rd, 1949. This dude playing guitar, and he's singing a little bit here on one of the greatest Fleetwood Mac songs ever.
Love it.
Was born. He's 75 today.
She broke down, let me in.
I love this song so much.
Me too.
Happy birthday, Lindsey Buckingham,
yes.
75 years old. Okay, here's some breaking news, and I think it's somewhat positive. Sue, you highlighted earlier on the show that despite people in a panic about toilet paper because of the port strike, we were going to be okay anyway. But now I think we're going to be okay through the holidays, because this is just breaking here in the last 15 minutes. The union representing the longshoremen, 45,000 striking dock workers, has reached a deal to suspend the strike. So there's not a solution for this at this point. They're going to suspend it until after the holidays, until January 15th, to provide time to negotiate a new contract. I heard on Fox, I hope I heard this wrong, but I thought I heard Dana Perino say that the two sides had not met face-to-face since July.
Like, well,
how is that possible?
Yeah.
But anyway, that's good news. I think that gives now might be a little bit of a political gift here for the administration. So I'm not sure. But he did not invoke Taft-Hartley, which would have, you know, ordered them back to work. They agreed to do this. And we'll find out more, because that is just a breaking story right now. We don't know a whole lot more. We'll keep you posted. Let's do this, though.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Well, it's terrible in North Carolina right now. Here's an example. This is a woman that just got her power back on, and she took to the interwebs to broadcast this message.
There are bodies that are floating down the river, babies. And if this is not a wake-up call that our government is not for us, then I don't know what is. They're everyday citizens who are taken it upon themselves to go and deliver items and things to these people.
And I have a really good example of that here in a second. But this is a figure. Now, I mentioned this earlier. I don't have this confirmed or vetted. It's a very, very staggering number that she throws out here.
Pray for Western North Carolina. I don't believe everything that you're hearing on the news because they're not. One of my friends in Canada had heard that there were like 200 people missing and maybe 40 dead. Y'all, so much more than that. At the local hospital in Asheville, there are over 900 unidentified bodies.
Now, that's the part that I don't have confirmed. If that's even close to being true, that is another really, really bad, you know, aspect of this. Now, on the private citizens doing the work that the government maybe should be doing, this is a guy by the name of Jonathan Howard.
Here's the problem. I'm going to tell you everything that's happening from the ground, what I'm actually seeing, because what they're telling you is complete bullshit on the news, and these politicians don't have a clue and they're lying. And I'll say this now, I'll say it at the end of the video. The only thing I need from this video is helicopters. If I have helicopters, I can save lives. Without helicopters, I can't reach these people. It doesn't matter how many chainsaws and trucks I got, I can't get to them. They're 10 miles in, 20 miles, 40 miles in the mountains. There's no way to get with them or even communicate with them.
So he's a pilot. He has a helicopter. He's trying to help people.
What got me fired up about this was yesterday, me and my team did the rescue of that 11-day-year-old baby. And all these government officials and social media, they're showing that video, that pictures and video of that rescue and claiming that like they have some like government helped with that. And I mean, even USAA, I think it was USAA Today, wrote an article about it saying it was a Florida National Guard that went and got it, like with a helicopter. No, it was me, my buddy Charlie, and a civilian named Zeb with his own personal helicopter out of Wilmington, North Carolina. Like without that civilian, that baby would be dead. And the old lady we went and rescued after that, she'd be dead too because she had one day left of oxygen. No one was going to go get them.
Yeah, you know, we have some reports in. Now, I'm always take a little bit of a wait-and-see approach, but there's some reports that some law enforcement officials are threatening to arrest people that are going into some of these areas to help people, which that doesn't make any sense to me. But Jonathan Howard says he needs helicopters.
They're literally allowing these people to die in the mountains right now because we can't get helicopters. They got money for everything else in the world right now, but if they could just get us helicopters, we could fly out there and rescue these people. So I hope this video goes viral. I hope these politicians get fired. I hope people get pissed off. They'll probably kick me out of the state of North Carolina for doing this, but you know what? I don't care, because if I can save one more life for it, it's worth it to me.
So I just saw when I opened up, I was looking for the information on the longshoremen, and I saw a video that was posted of a police escort of all kinds of emergency vehicles, you know, utility trucks and tree crews and stuff like that. And that was encouraging. But there are, you know, to his point, you know, this is one of the things I think that's a little undercovered is you have people that are deep into the terrain and we don't know how they are because they can't communicate. The number, and I can't quote this accurately, Sue, so I won't try, but the number of utility poles that are down that have to be replaced is staggering. So you're talking weeks and weeks, and this will have an implication for the election because some of these people might not have a chance or an opportunity to vote. Now, Elon Musk might have something to say about that with Starlink, and we're going to keep people posted on that. There's technology that we can use. And I guess maybe the one thing I would say, think about this, the timing of this. If this would have happened like the week before, 2 weeks before the election, you might have had an election that's put on hold for a month.
Oh, yeah.
Just to make sure that people are able to cast their votes. So we'll see. We'll certainly keep you posted. We'll talk about all of this tomorrow on the Reardon Roundtable. Jane's going to be here on the panel, of course. State Representative Steve Butts and Gene Evans. We'll talk some sports with Frank Cusimano, entertainment with Paul Hall. And then Bernie Miklas is going to join us tomorrow night on 97.1 FM Talk to talk about the Cardinals reset, if that's what we're calling it. And Rick Wakeman from Yes. And on the topic of legendary rock stars, how about going out with little Lindsey Buckingham on his birthday? He's 75 today. Ladies and gentlemen, have a great Thursday evening. We'll talk tomorrow at 3.
Get more at 971talk.com.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.